Go ahead.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be in your home this afternoon, Mr. Ripku, and we can start then by asking you to put your name on the recording, and
Yes.
then and to your place and date of birth, which is repeating what I've already jotted down.
Yes,
And
yes.
then we'll get into things.
Okay. I was born in 19 June the 9th.
Your name is?
Oh, Joe. My name is Joe Ripku. And I was born on June the 9th, 1930, in the old city of Port Arthur, in Kern River. I was born in the house in the bed, because the doctors come there, because they didn't have a small hospital here then. Mm-hmm. So I was there. And then after that, I went to the school, Claude Garten School,
okay,
for a few years there.
In Kern River?
Kern River, yeah. And then I moved downtown to Lincoln Street, where the post office is now.
Yes.
And then later on, it was bought up by the post office, and then we moved from there to 354 Ambrose Street,
mm-hmm,
up in sort of in the hill. Right next to us was the
higher level.
Yeah, the medium.
Right.
Yeah, there was
okay.
a children's shelter there years ago,
mm,
and now it's got apartments in it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we used to live there.
Okay. On Ambrose.
On Ambrose Street, yeah.
And you went to Central School then at first?
Central
you?
School, yeah. Went for, what, grade 7, 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and John Locock was the principal there. And then Chuck Hodgson, he was our teacher there. Yeah, he's the last one. Chuck Hodgson finally died about a year or so.
Mm.
So he was in his almost 100 years old. Yeah.
So the gentleman you first named there would have been known by many people as Jack Locock, I suppose.
Or Jack, yeah. I thought it was John. Yeah.
I knew him in his latter years.
Okay. Yeah, right. Wilda he was a good man, too.
Wilda Locock was his wife. And
oh, I see.
Active
that.
With the Coalition for Waverly Park.
Oh,
in
yeah.
In the 90s, got to know Wilda pretty well.
Uh-huh.
I got to know her at
yeah.
St. Paul's and Trinity United Church even earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So her husband
mm-hmm.
was
yeah.
a teacher.
Yeah.
He was the principal there, wasn't he?
Yeah, principal there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so,
then you went off to high school.
Then I went to high school, Hillcrest High School after that. Just got my grade 12.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to work in the paper mill. And in the meantime, my brother was working there and my dad was working there, right? So in 1953, my brother got killed there in the paper mill.
Which mill? In the provincial?
Abitibi. Top end there, yeah. At the far end.
The Thunder Bay?
Thunder Bay, yeah.
Abitibi,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So he got killed in the machine there in the finishing room.
Good
he got caught.
Yeah.
He had a hose. Okay, what they didn't show about the hose. They cleaned the paper in that off when the finishing paper.
Yes.
Well, they usually use it in this hand. But I think he had it on this side, and the hose was behind him.
Oh, no.
So when he did that, the hose got caught and pulled him right in and killed him instantly.
Would have
there.
That big,
yeah,
those
so,
huge machines.
So that was my brother. That was my brother. I had no sister.
Nice.
He was the only one I had. Yeah.
So you were left as the only child.
Yes, yes. I was the only child.
Yeah. So this was in the 50s already.
In the 50s.
I understand that your involvement with the grain trade was earlier than that.
Yes, yeah. Just a student. I was a student.
So you were in what grade?
I was in grade 11. But yeah,
okay.
I was 1945. I'd be 15.
Had you had summer jobs before?
Oh yeah, I had the job in the paper mill sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be working on that labor gang, you know,
yeah.
86 cents an hour.
Never
get
rich
time.
On that.
Yeah.
So why did you go to the grain trade that?
Well,
summer of 45.
It was pretty good money, eh? Like you know,
yeah.
you
better than the paper mill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I went there.
And which elevator?
It was Pool 9 at that time.
It was Pool 9.
There was Pool 9. That's Pool 9 here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a slip here with the boat. And this is that elevator that blew up right here, Pool
okay.
5.
And Richards's is on the
oh,
other
it's
side
further
of
down.
Pool 9.
Yeah,
yes.
Further away. Like,
so it's this. It's the group just short of the
I think it's gone.
Port Arthur Shipyard as well.
It's further north. Oh, yeah,
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're working in Pool 9. And
Pool 9.
Maybe we should talk about what it was like to work there first,
what your impressions were.
We'll hold the drama. Let the drama build here.
Okay. When I started working, they gave me a job as shoveling the boxcars. You had a 4x4 shovel and had a chain on it. And they would open up the boxcars for the grain. So we'd have to go run up there and catch the grain and go like this and take it all out. And every time you have to run back, and you gotta make sure you hold on to that the shovel, the flat shovel,
yeah,
until it's empty in there. And then the worst part was when you work with flax, you know, flax is slippery.
Yes, indeed. Oh,
and
indeed.
That was horrible to work with, like, you know.
Well, I was thinking running in grain, isn't it? Yeah. You're clambering on top of the grain.
Yeah, we're just still, that's right, and your feet are slipping, you know.
At what point would you start? How much grain would there still be in the car?
I guess about this much.
Oh, yeah, sort of 3-4 feet of meter or
yeah.
more.
Well, it was sort of run out, and then we would have to go, maybe it's 4 feet high
and
or something.
And you're climbing
like,
over as best you can.
You're climbing over there, almost hitting the ceiling in the boxcar there, you know.
Still that full sometimes.
Yeah. And we had a mask on, just a thin mask, paper-thin mask. That's all we had.
All it did was to catch some of the dust on the outside.
That didn't catch nothing.
I see.
Yeah, I know.
And what you were mentioning, flax is probably the most treacherous one
to work with. Yeah.
What about the other grains? What are they like?
They had rye, and they had flax, and they had...
The wheat.
Oh, yeah, wheat. Mostly wheat, like, yeah.
Wheat would be a good deal easier to...
Yeah. No, but it's slippery, too. It's running on marbles on that.
Were the guys who did this work fairly young, as a rule?
They were young, There
were
some students there, too, and older guys working there.
Because it's a...
That was their job, eh? And I thought, oh, boy, what a job, like a hard job, you know, for 86 cents an hour.
Yeah.
And then what happened, in July, and then I stepped on a nail from the board that they pull off, and it was under the weed or something, and I stepped on it. So they said, okay, Joe, you'll have to go work on the dock, clean up in that, because we don't want to give you compensation. Like, you know, if they have an injury, their compensation would go up higher, right? So they just kept me there.
How bad was the injury?
A nail in my foot. About a 2-inch nail in my foot, eh?
Broken the skin, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. It went right up, almost through my top of my skin there. And that hurt.
Yeah.
Oh.
Did they send you off to the doctor then? Or?
Oh, yeah. I went to see the doctor, yeah. But then, like I said, I went
pulled the nail out. They got the boot off, your sock off, and so on. Blood all over the
blood. Blood all over. Oh, gee. And hurt. Like, for about a week, it would just go throb, like boom, boom, boom. Because it's trying to heal inside. It.
Yes.
Trying to coagulate.
Did you get any kind of time off at all? Or?
No. They kept me on the job.
And they
said, Joe, you go on the dock here. And there's a slip with the boats. And you go clean up around there, you know.
Yeah.
And that was my job.
And they weren't watching you to be sure you were on your feet working all the time?
Oh, no.
As long as you did something useful and so on.
Just something to do.
So they didn't have to
pay compensation.
So they didn't have to admit to workers' comp that
you'd
suffered
an
injury.
Yeah. That's the way it was.
Did you see a lot of that? People getting injured?
No, not much at all. No. I guess I was the only one that I know of. You
were the lucky one to discover how the system was working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So...
So gradually it healed.
It healed a little bit. I kept working out there, and then I'm working on the dock here. Now I was right here, the elevator's there, that pool five, and I was sort of looking at the boat here, and then all of a sudden I hear a brrr, boom, big, like a mushroom come up. The whole top of the elevator blew right up, from that spontaneous combustion. And I look, and there's wheat, and there's all these concrete, like big this table. Concrete pieces like falling all over, falling in the boat here too.
And your table here is, imperial.
6 feet.
Feet.
They have three.
It's more than 6 feet long, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, it must be
but
five by seven.
They had 3 meter size concrete, like it's on that paper that I have in here.
The history that you
big,
written.
Like big, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it sunk the boat or not in the bay there. I'm not sure.
No.
How far across the slip would you have been?
I'd say about 150 feet. Yeah, right. Not far at all.
Were you looking up into the sky at that point?
I was sort of looking. I was resting. I was looking at the boat here. You know, I like to watch the boat. And guys were working in that. And then all of a sudden, that explosion. And I looked. And then after the explosion, I looked up there. And there was a couple of guys walking on a beam or something like that. And they dropped into the bin. Well, they were pretty well dead. They were so like blew up and everything.
Yeah.
So they just ran in the wheat. They either suffocated or just died from the wounds, blown right up.
Yes.
And there were 17 guys were killed in that elevator explosion. And 37 men were wounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And what else do you remember about what you saw there?
I mean, well, yeah, like I said,
you're one of the few real eyewitnesses.
I think I'm the only one because I was on the dock here. And I looked and I looked, and I said, and then a few minutes later, I'd be looking, there's different elevator there. Some guys were coming there, like from the other elevator, to see what happened there.
Yes.
And then maybe an hour or so later, I'd hear the fire truck coming in that. But I think they were at the back, because I was in the front of the elevator here,
yes,
facing the lake. But they were
where
there.
The loading would take place for the,
yeah, for the boat, well. Like for the boat, yes. Yeah, yeah.
The boat that was tied up, was it tied up on your side or on their
side? No, on the other side. Yeah.
Next to the elevator.
Close to this elevator there, yeah. Yeah. So, well, they have these conveyor belts that take the wheel off, you know, into the,
yes,
into the boats. And
they were, in fact, yeah, loading.
Like I said, I was, 1 month I was there, like July, and then I think it was August the 7th, it blew up,
you know, about right.
After lunch. I think it was after lunch or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. And about an hour later, my dad and my brother came down to see which elevator blew up, because
mm-hmm,
I was in pool 9.
Yes.
So they just left their job and come to see me. And they came down, but I didn't see them. But I went to the office. I said, I quit. So I quit the next day. I said, I don't even want to go to work. So I quit then and there. Yeah.
Did other people quit as well, or?
Oh, I wouldn't know if they
no,
quit.
No, you're not aware of anyone.
No,
else,
oh
right?
No.
What did they say to you?
Well, oh, okay, Joel, that's it. You know, what are they going to say? Big explosion, people killed in that.
Yes.
They didn't say, you stay. No, I quit. That's it.
Yeah.
They don't pay me nothing after that. Yeah, then I went home.
They probably envied your ability to leave.
I'm still alive, like,
yes,
you know, when you think of it, eh? You know, and look in there. Oh, it was a nice day, too. It was a nice sunny day.
Yeah.
That was, I think it was August the 7th.
It coincided almost exactly with the explosion, the dropping of the first atomic bomb. So I was in
45,
I was checking federal, provincial gatherings at the time and
work
on, you know, post-war planning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in the Winnipeg Free Press and the explosion at Port Arthur really rivaled, because initially a bomb had been dropped and people didn't know much about it. It took a few days for the word about the atomic bomb to be put out.
It might have taken a week to see what's happening in Japan there,
yes,
you know.
So the Port Arthur explosion was bigger news
everybody. People were going there with cars and to see what's happening in that, you know.
Yes.
And the fire trucks were there. And like they say, the fire truck didn't have enough ladders high enough there.
No.
And here it shows who the firemen were climbing up there right to the roof somehow, and they had ropes and they were coming down to trying to get some of the guys that are there.
Yeah, that had fallen into the bins.
Yeah, not even the bin, no, the ones that are still alive.
I see.
And wounded.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Were the steps that they used to, or the ladders they used to get up to the top, would they have been blown out as well? Were these fellows up there actually caught?
Well, you know what? I think they had to. That's the elevator, and the ladder. They couldn't get up this high at the top, so they were here someplace.
Yeah, this is the fireman.
The fireman. They got in here somehow. They brought ropes, and they went up to the roof, and then they threw the rope down, and a couple of firemen were looking into the different windows and that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were getting a few guys out of there.
Sure.
To bring them back out of
there,
the wounded ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did the work stop at your elevator that day?
No. It just kept going.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Elevator's elevator, eh?
Grain's got to be kept moving.
No elevator stopped.
It's all stopped at next door, but.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
But not in yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll never forget that explosion. Oh.
No.
Just awful. I had dreams for years after that.
I can imagine.
Because I see these guys walking on the beamers, like in the, there was a walkway,
mm-hmm,
and they were there, and all of a sudden they fall in the bin, and there was some weed. There's weed in there, so I presume they suffocated when they fell into the weed, because you know the weed will bring you down, suck you down, eh?
Certainly, if it's
it's loose weed.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I couldn't get over that. Yeah.
I think the most curious interview we've had in this regard was someone who was working in the field near Murillo, and it must have been, the countryside must have been less treed than it is now.
Oh, yeah.
At least so, I think. He said that he was walking behind the horses, the machinery, dead in line with Port Arthur. That very day, and he suddenly saw, you know, a kind of a brown puff.
Brown,
and the, workhouse sort of popping up. And he said he saw it from near Murillo. So
you
and he are the two witnesses to actually watch it.
But I was right there. I thought, wow, 15 years old, you know. I said, oh, gee, I got out of there. I was scared for a couple of years, even, like, to work, even. I thought, you know. But then, like I said, I went to the paper mill to work on the work gang there. Sure. Mr. Dorn was the big boss there. Mm-hmm. There was the Dorns and the Duke families in Kern River, eh?
All the Dukes.
And there was always a rivalry between them. There was always somebody fighting somebody. Well, they had about 14, 15 kids each. Like the McCoys in that, eh? They having fights after school in the area of the rink is there now.
Did you find yourself telling the story to your friends and to others?
I told many people. My kids know all about it.
Sure.
Yeah, many, many of them. Yeah.
Were other boys interested in hearing about what you'd seen? Or?
Older people. I didn't tell young people because, you know, they're not interested in that anyways. No. Once you get they're adult, then they'll, you know, so one of my clocks.
Should have rung 17 times. Owen.
When it happened, how did you feel? How did you react?
Scared. I was, you know, the flame went up about 300 feet. The mushroom just went like that. And then looking at it, there was fire there. I guess the wheat was on fire. And the combustion, they were still burning the dust, like, in there.
Spontaneous ignition,
combustion.
Would ignite other things.
Did you feel a blast at all?
No, I didn't feel the blast, no. Because it went up. It didn't go out. And all the concrete, straight up. And all the concrete from there dropped like that. There were little pieces falling beside me, but that was nothing. Because I was about 100, 160 feet away. But the big chunks were falling all over the place.
So it was 300 feet up, you'd say, the fireball, was it actually?
Oh, at least 300 feet. The guy could see from Murillo.
Yes.
Well, like, that's you know, he's there, like, and if it's up like that, it would just flume right up like that. Just like an atomic bomb, the mushroom going way up. So anyway, that was one of my greatest things that I've ever seen, like.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a rush of people?
Not right away. I think the firemen came maybe about an hour or so. And then different people from the other elevators came to look to see what's happening, you know. And they didn't come to here. They were right here or there.
Sure.
Close to it.
So I wonder, would the office at this elevator have been? It's pool 5.
Pool 5, this is pool 9.
Would the office at Pool 5 have been blown out as well, so that there'd be no one to call the fire department initially?
I guess
an hour seems quite a long time to wait, doesn't it?
I think at least an hour.
There were barracks in Current River, and they went.
There was the army barracks there.
And I think they came down to
in the casino. Were the army barracks, and there was a big place where the dance hall, which was used for the army for meals. It was like a cafeteria there. But like I said, there was people mulling around there, you know.
How long did the excitement continue around? Well, through most of the afternoon? Or?
All afternoon, And the next day, I wasn't there.
What did you do the next day?
Well, I didn't do nothing. I was sort of scared for a while. I just trying to recuperate, You know, the shock.
Yes.
I'm 15 years old, and I see this happening, like,
Did you go to see any growing up, or did your father? What was your father doing?
He was an oiler at the Abitibi Mill, Thunder Bay, up there. He was an oiler there.
Did he provide any kind of consolation, advice to you about this?
No.
Or your mother?
He was Ukrainian, you know, and he hardly talked English, He just had a job. He was an oiler.
Sure, you'd learn Ukrainian, though, I suppose.
Well, I talk in fluently Ukrainian. So, I understand it, too.
So he could have comforted you, but
a little bit. I'm happy. Like, dobrze tanie tobasho, Tommy. That means good thing you weren't in that elevator there, Tommy. You were hugging me like, you know, and my brother.
Just be grateful you're alive.
But, oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
you're 15 and you're going to survive.
Yeah.
Well, you had survived.
Oh, yeah, I survived.
There was a 16-year-old who was in that elevator. In
well, there were some young guys
some
there.
Very young people.
I remember there was a John Horty. His face was all burnt and everything. There was a Frank Petroni. There was a Frank. There was a lot of young guys that worked part-time like me, eh?
Yeah. Did you know any of the ones who were...
Oh, yeah, I knew
them. You know them early?
Oh, yeah. I knew them from the school. Yeah,
so
from the high school there.
Sure.
Yeah.
From Hillcrest.
And they suffered and suffered, like, you know, like all burnt and that.
Yeah.
They had a tough life. Yeah. Yeah. Like, when you're burnt like that.
Yes.
The girls, you know, they look at you, you know, and that. But the John Horty, he married a girl. He had a girl at the time, and she was a redhead, and she stuck by him. And they had about 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very fortunate, yeah, that she stuck with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Redheads are supposed to be more sensitive to pain.
Oh, is that right?
That's what the scientists tell us.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever reason, something about their genetic makeup that makes redheads more sensitive to pain.
Yeah.
So maybe she felt his pain and sympathized
I think so.
With
yeah.
him.
Yeah. 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 And you know what happened in the future? I had a couple of kids there. There was 2 kids he had, maybe 5 or 6. There was 3 kids, and it was... The ice was on the river and that, the Kern River. So the kids were 6 or 7 years old. And his 2 kids and 1 other kid, they drowned. They went on the ice.
Oh, no.
Just, that's it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, that was a horrible time.
This was the Horty family.
Right? Horty, yeah.
Yeah, the Horty.
John Horty, yeah. Yeah, so. Oh, well. Everybody has a cross to bear, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Everybody, no matter who you are.
Well, we were saying that we almost got hit, partly due to my carelessness. I should have been driving a bit more slowly there on Elm, but we were thinking for a moment that this trip we were making was jinxed, you know, that we were in for an accident. So, so far, so good.
Yeah.
Well, we knew it that, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Did anybody, I know there were inquiries afterwards. Were you ever interviewed on what happened?
Never. No one ever said nothing.
Nothing.
And I told some of the guys that worked there, I seen in that, but never really.
Newspaper
no one said,
call?
No. Nobody called, no, no.
Because
they didn't want to because, you know, all the elevators were there working and that, so.
Did you get the sense, in fact, it was being played down somewhere?
I think it was played down, sure. Well, there were about 15 elevators then, you know.
Oh, sure.
And you see spontaneous combustion. So you get the C.D. Howard, somebody, you know, check it all up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then they say it was spontaneous combustion. Then after that, they start cleaning the dust, you know, the dust and that, and save the dust for farms or something
pellets.
Like that for pellets,
turn it into feed.
So you know, like a live and learn, eh?
A cash crop.
All these places they live and learn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you understand? You didn't understand the spontaneous combustion right off. You didn't realize.
No,
that
I just,
that's what
I
actually...
just, I just said, well, you know what? You put a switch on and it's gone.
Yeah.
Like you do in the house too. They got gas leak from your furnace. And you can smell a little bit. If you put your switch on, it could just blow up your house.
Yes.
And that happens all the time.
Yeah.
People
certainly
put the switch on and boom.
If you smell gas at all,
get
out.
Ooh,
get
out.
You worry about anything where there might be a smell.
Run out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back up
so.
And call someone.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my...
This will have made you, and then when your brother died,
that
would be
horrible.
What, 8 years later? Was it in 53, did you say?
He died in 1953.
So
I got married in
1952,
later. And he died in 1953. And the same year, I had a deep vein thrombosis in my leg.
Oh, boy.
But I was a hockey player then. Like, I tell you about that. But anyway, when I got the clot, I couldn't play hockey after. I was 23 years old. I was finished for hockey. And before that, I was on the Memorial, remember the Port Arthur West End Bruins? Well, I was on their team then.
Okay.
I was 17 years old then. Yeah. It was me, Barton Bradley, and Dave Creighton. We came up from juvenile. Mm-hmm. We played, and they brought us up. So I was one of the hockey players there.
How far did the Bruins go that year?
They won the Cup.
They
Memorial
won the Memorial Cup.
Oh, yeah. I just came back last week from the Hall of Fame hockey. I wanted to see it. So I looked all over, like I thought, we were there 5 hours. I took my son-in-law, I said, I'll pay you to see it. I was walking for 3 hours, and I was getting tired. I said, Bill, I said, I'm 82, get a wheelchair. So we got a wheelchair and wheeled me around for an hour there. to look at all the pictures and that.
Was there a memorial cup section?
Well, there was, just showed the cup. Just showed the cup, right, with the name on it.
So you've been at the Sports Hall of Fame here in Thunder Bay.
Oh, yeah, I've been there many a time.
Because that, of course, would be the place where your win would be memorialized.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've even got a picture here of our team.
Mm-hmm.
When we won the cup, just before we won the Memorial Cup, they took a picture of our team behind Maple Leaf Gardens on the sidewalk.
Oh,
so we were all there with, you know.
That was like Creighton there, isn't it?
Okay. Oh, let me put my glasses on. I'll tell you who they are. That's Red Olson. That's our coach, okay. Ed Lozon. That's Red Olson. That was Peter Durham. He's passed away. That was Benny White.
Yeah.
He's got Alzheimer's right now. And that was, I think it was Danny Lewicki. And that was Art Harris. That was Jerome Zager. He was a spare goalie. And that's me.
Ooh.
That's Robbie Reitzel, Barton Bradley, Bill Tomlinson. He was the president. And Ted Whalen, he was the manager there.
Mm-hmm.
And then here is...
Who's the middle chap?
Who's in the center?
Syke Hedge. Remember Syke Hedge? He was a real curling avid.
Owen's got to have the memory. Yeah. I came to town in 78.
Yeah.
So it's Owen.
Danny Lewicki. He was a pickup. There was three pickups. Sure. Danny Lewicki, Al Charles, and Johansson. So and that's Alf Bakary. He passed away a long time ago. This is Alfie Childs. He passed away a long time ago. And this is, I think it's Bert Fonzo, Buck Forslund, Rudy Miege. Yeah. He was the captain. He was a very good player. Oh, mm-hmm. Good stick hander. And that's Bobby Farrell. And I forget. And this is Haggard. I forget his name now.
You got a good memory, Joe.
The trainer. I'm just thinking about it now. Yeah.
Who's got the original of the picture?
Well, I got one on my wall here.
Oh, you do have one framed.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, when you have a picture of this sort, you want to take it down and get it framed. The framing post will do a good job down
there. Oh, my son-in-law did that. He put the names on there and everything.
Oh, very nice.
In my family. I'll show you. I want to see it?
Sure.
You want to turn this off?
Well, we'll see it after.
Oh, we'll see it after. There's no hurry for
just
that.
Just in case we've got something.
Maybe I'll take your picture beside your picture there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to go. The death of your brother, on top of what you'd seen 8 years earlier, did that have you thinking about how dangerous work was?
Oh, yeah. And you know what? They wouldn't take no blame or nothing, the paper mill. And but a few years later, what they did then, okay, this is the paper roll where they rolled it, and my brother was holding like that. They would put pipe here, you know, so that you couldn't get past the pipe, a railing. So you couldn't reach. That was later. It's always too late, eh? Same as over here, accidents.
One person dies and then they do something.
Then they think, we should do that.
Yes.
Like, you know, right now on John Street here, we have a sidewalk coming up from Valley Street. You come up, John,
mm-hmm.
and at Chirk over here, the sidewalk goes a little bit and then it stopped. There's two people that have property. And they didn't want to have the sidewalk on their property. There's about 230 feet. So there's no sidewalk there. And then it goes up further, there's more sidewalk. And I said, the people that walk on the sidewalk, they go on the road part. I said, you know, and I told that to Gertuga. I told him, I said, you know what? There should be a sidewalk here. Cut the trees down that are there. Who cares about the trees? Put the sidewalk in there.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, someone's going to get killed, mind you. And then they'll say, oh, we better put a sidewalk there. You know, that's too late. Now's the time to do it. But
was the sidewalk being built on people's property?
No, on the city property.
Yeah.
It's on city property.
I
said, they're only
people.
I'm going
to say that's bloody awful.
Oh, jeez.
How in the world did
so
city
mad.
Yield to that?
Yeah. If you go up, you'll see there's a house in the corner, sidewalk, and then there's two houses. There's a new house and another one there.
Yeah, I think I've canvassed along there, and I think I've noticed that. I've got a big little picture of what you're describing.
And people are walking on the side there.
It's just plain disgusting. Oh.
But anyways, so that's one little issue that I have here.
And a very good one.
Yeah.
When did you decide to be a carpenter?
I decided when I used to buy and sell real estate, eh? like in town, buy a lot or something and sell it, you know. I like doing that.
Does that buy the groceries?
Oh, yeah. I never lost money on real estate. I double up or whatever.
You actually were dealing in real estate with your occupation?
I was paying my income tax, too, as a real estate man, you know. Okay. The first year they said no, then I sold a few lots, and they said, well, you know, you're in the business. So instead of getting a 50% discount, like on the income tax, I paid the full shot. So I said, that's okay, I'll pay the full shot. So I'd buy here and there. I bought this 15 years before I had the subdivision here.
Yes. It takes patience. You have to be patient.
And I think I paid $5 for a 1-acre lot here. I bought five lots.
Well, that's a good return on your investment.
I said, and then I joined on to here, you know. Yeah. And I had Bruner Construction do everything. Paving, sidewalks, sewer and water.
Servicing.
Yeah, so. And he was a good man, too. Yeah, Silvio Gregorio.
So carpentering was done on the side?
No, that was my full-time job.
When did you start doing that?
Okay, I was, 1973.
That's 20 years.
I told my wife, I'm going to buy a lot and build a house. Well, you don't know how to build. So, but I learned.
So this was, you'd been dealing in real estate, and then you decided after 15 or 20 years of that you were going.
Well, what happened, I bought that property, that College Park property with my lawyer. We were partners. And when I made them a bundle of money there, and then I went to be a carpenter after that. I went golfing the first year in the summer. I said, I'm going to go golfing. I'm retired at 40, I said, you know. And I'm going there, and I see these guys. They're old guys. They're 65 and 70. They're hardly going. I said, you know what? I'm 40 years old. What am I retired for? So I bought a lot, and I started building after that.
And
all these buildings I put up here. These are all my buildings I put up.
Did you receive training as a kid?
No, nothing. Yeah. In fact, I don't think I even knew what the part of the hammer to hold, the head or the.
Oh, well, you knew that.
But I knew. See, I was a building.
Have you done work at home? Did your father build or?
No. See, I was a building inspector for a couple of years in the Port Arthur.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what training did you have for that?
Just grade 12, that's all.
I see.
That's all it was, yeah. And then what happened, I lost a job because after the war, the guys that came back, they had seniority.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, I won't tell the name, but he got the job because he has seniority. He was in the Army, eh? So
sure. Did you go to building inspecting right after your graduation? Because that would
have
been one.
Oh, no, a few years after.
I see.
Yeah. I can't but keep it in order. But
it was a veteran who got the job.
He got the job, yeah. Yes. And then anyway, he didn't do a good job anyways, but he knew nothing about construction. So he knew office work.
Of course, you knew a hell of a lot yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But you learned?
I remember old Tom, remember Tom Jones Sr.? He'd come in there for a permit there, you know, and that. Oh, big cigar, big hat. Oh, God damn it. Oh, better not watch my line. He'd be swearing.
If you're going to tell a story, you may have to do some swearing. I've heard.
Okay. And I told the old man, I said, you know what? You don't swear in our office because we have ladies working in here. He was using the F language and all that.
Yeah.
So he looked at me, you know. Then after that, we were friends. He took it to heart. Like, whoa, this guy, he's telling me off, you know. And he was in the hole so much, like income tax and all that kind of stuff. But hey, he built up the company there.
Yeah, sure.
Tom Jones, we'd go, Tom Doan Jr. and Peter Young, the lawyer, we used to go for coffee because I was retired and I was building and that. So I didn't have to work for nobody. Yeah, so that was funny. My biggest job there, I built a sixplex.
Yes.
Well, I was noticing it was top of the heap, I think, when you passed them over. This building?
This is the one.
Oh, okay, same building?
No, it's a different. That's my son-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but this is the building, my pride and joy. I drew the plans, framed it. My wife was helping me framing. My son was helping me. It took 9 months from scratch to finish to build it. And in here, I have a denturist, renting it to the main floor, the denturist. And upstairs, I had two floors for myself. I had 900 square feet per two-bedroom unit at the back and the front, too. So I kept the two stories myself. And I built I had 1,800 square feet for myself. I'm going to live there, eh?
Yeah.
10 years I lived there. And I had three bedrooms, I had a family room, I had two bathrooms in there, washer and dryer. It was self-contained. And I lived there. My wife and I, we lived there.
Sure.
Yeah. So we made a living.
Well, it's
that.
One of the ways to go because
yeah.
I had an uncle in Winnipeg who yeah. was a carpenter, a yeah. contractor.
And my family would help. My son-in-laws would help me too.
Sure.
Lift walls and stuff like that. Yeah. But I would put up the walls and I would put on the floor joists myself.
Yeah.
All the floor joists up there. An ordinary Ardox nail. None of this yeah. boom, 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 boom
no,
stuff.
No, yeah. hammer work in those
oh,
days.
Oh, boy. And you use the Ardox nails. They're like screws, eh?
Yeah.
And if you make a mistake, you almost have to have a hacksaw to cut it off.
Yeah. They so, want to stay you know, in.
And I would put the floor joists on, and then I put the bridging like this, the cross mm-hmm. pieces there. And mm-hmm. my son was helping me. I'd lay it out, and he'd nail all the bridging in there. And then the plywood, I'd get Peterson Lumber, and he would... No, Noron Supply on Memorial Avenue. I got all my material from him. And he would drop the plywood on the roof. Then I would scatter it around, like to put it in place and that, you know. Yeah. And it had a tongue and groove, so he had to bang it with a hammer and 2x4 to get it together.
And you did all of this work
all
by
myself?
Yourself?
Yeah, I told my wife, I look at my hands, small little hands, and I did all that work.
Yeah,
yeah? Cutting and everything.
Did you ever think of hiring some guys?
Well, once
to work
in a while,
with?
I wouldn't do the roof. I would hire the
yeah,
roof up because
you need someone.
I won't do that. No truss. And this had truss roof. So I hired a guy to put the truss roof on. He had the machine, eh?
Sure.
So he put the truss roof, put the plywood, and put the wood fascia on there.
Yeah.
And then the guys put the aluminum on after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was 52 doors and windows on the outside. And my son-in-law, he's a carpenter. His name is Paul Facca. He's well known here. He works for Michelli, and he works for them. Does all the finishing work for them. Yeah.
But who did your brickwork?
Right?
Who did your brickwork?
Oh boy. Just the front. I'm trying to think. Morrison or Mason or something like that, in a way.
And
it's such a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick Trapea, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
we're all young, eh?
Yeah.
Having
you know?
A finishing carpenter available is great because the
yeah. oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
a skill you want someone to apply yeah. very
yeah.
carefully.
Yeah, he would hang up all day, but we would both build the cabinet, the kitchen cabinets. We'd use melamine board, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So we'd cut the pieces, and then he'd say, "Okay, Joe, you do the rest." So I have to have the doors on to cut the groove. When you put the plastic on, you put it on there like you know, you go like that, and you hammer it down. And glue, and I did all the doors myself. He cut all the doors for me. He made the framework and everything.
Yeah. Mounting doors all by yourself is not an easy thing to do either.
No, I know. Yeah,
yeah. Put the hinges on.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be nice to have at least one pair of hands there to
yeah.
hold things with you.
No, like I said, I was a one-man team, and I enjoyed every bit.
And was that partly because you didn't want all the paperwork and so on and so forth of employing others?
No. I just took it on myself.
You were happy to do it.
I was happy to do it. My wife wanted to work with me. She worked with me.
Sure. If you had a wife.
We were married 57 years, and she passed away almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was my right-hand man.
Sure.
And she would get up on the roof, nailing about a foot away from the edge like she's nailing. I said, "Be careful, Nettie." I said, "Be careful there, you know." And she'd be, "Oh, I'll watch, you know." She had boots with steel toes, no helmet. Nobody come around. Anyways, and we were doing that. My son was helping us too there.
Yeah.
And we get it up, get it all done. Yeah.
No one ever fell off.
No. Yeah. No one got hurt or nothing. No,
no workers' comp claim to be filed.
No, nothing at all. No.
And of course, when you're working by yourself for yourself,
yeah.
in that sense,
yeah.
or with family.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
can also pace
right.
it. You do it,
yeah.
as much work each day as you can.
And after
you didn't work in the wintertime, I don't
know. No. This is summertime.
Yeah.
After and it was
take
easy
care of the
to sell them
season.
Days. You know, you build it, you sell it.
Yeah.
Not about much money, but you made money there anyways.
Sure.
Yeah. And when we go, every winter we go to Florida, Bahamas, or Aruba for a trip, my wife and I, a couple of weeks at a time, and Florida. And every second year we took our kids. I had four kids, three girls and a boy. And we went to Florida, Bahamas. Like, there was cheap to go then, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you pay maybe $700 for 2 weeks' holiday in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you pay almost $700 a day
yes.
in the Bahamas
yes.
there. Yeah, so we did a lot of that stuff. Traveling.
A long way from the Ukrainian village.
Oh, yeah.
And was your wife Ukrainian as well?
Oh, yeah, she was full Ukrainian, yeah.
So you could speak
yeah.
Ukrainian at home?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
the children learn Ukrainian?
No. They did a little bit. They didn't learn.
So if you,
my wife kept her language up too.
So if there was something you wanted to discuss in private, it was done in Ukrainian.
You talk Ukrainian. You got it. That's right on the button. We talk. They say, "Dad, what are you doing? What are you talking about?" "Oh, we're just talking, you know."
My parents did. I was the oldest of eight, and they would do it in German or even in Low German. But of course, if they do it enough, the kids begin to pick it up. It's probably in Low German because we were speaking German generally, so it would have been the dialect. Then a neighboring family moved in for a while, and they spoke Low German all the time. So we picked up the that. So then we
knew
what our
parents picked up some swear words, eh? Every language has swear words.
Yeah, well, surely were some in there.
And like I said, I was busy. And so I played hockey. Okay, I played hockey when we won the Memorial Cup. After that, I had signed with Boston Bruins because we were affiliated with Boston Bruins. So I signed with Boston, and they gave me $300 for signing. Big deal, eh? $300
Sure.
And it was a C form. So they sent you wherever they want.
Basically,
you know.
into their
farm
so,
system.
Yeah, so we went to training camp to Hershey, Pennsylvania, with all the pros and that. You know, that was a big deal.
Of course,
we took a train 2 days to get there by train. Yeah, we put our shoes out there in the porter, would polish them up in the old days. You know, signed the bill for the food.
Would you have known Penty, London?
Oh, I knew Penty, yeah. So he was across the road from me on Ambrose Street.
Okay.
And Joe, too. He passed away a long time ago.
So your thrombosis, was it a hockey injury?
No, they didn't even know what it was there, the doctor.
Would you have a swelling? Or?
Oh, my leg was all swollen in that. The doctor, somebody here said, you got like milk leg, like when the women get pregnant. I said, well, I'm not a woman, I'm not pregnant. So I went to St. Mary's Hospital in Duluth.
You were playing hockey at that time?
Yeah, I was playing hockey then, yeah.
Where were you at that time?
Pardon?
Where were you playing hockey?
I was playing here.
Okay.
The Bearcats. Like the last year.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I played down east in 1948. I played for Kitchener-Waterloo. They used to call them the Flying Dutchman. And Bobby Bauer was the coach, the Bauer brothers. And then the next year I played for Owen Sound Mercuries. And then when I played there, I got homesick and I got married. And I came home about before it ended. They sent me some money for making money there. So, but I got married in 1952. To my girlfriend, so we got married.
Sure.
Yeah, for 57
years. Tough question for you. Who was the captain of the Bearcats when you were playing?
Oh, let me think now. It wasn't Bill Mackey. It was, I'm trying to think. I don't know who it would be now.
I had an old picture of a Bearcat, black and white.
Yeah.
But it was, he was a captain.
Oh, yeah.
But
nobody's
been able to identify.
Oh, I see. So I'd have to look at the picture.
Yes, I'll arrange for that.
We'll have to have coffee together somewhere.
This is our junior leg. After Memorial Cup, we played again, and we went out west to play for the Memorial Cup again. But we lost to Regina Pats as we were going out, so we lost then. Yeah. And I kept all these pictures all these years.
Well, you should have.
Yeah,
sure.
they're
want to get them
framed.
And
you know, so many of my friends are dead.
Yeah.
This guy just died, Pete Pulowski, in the paper the other day.
I saw that.
We had like a Bowery gang in Kern River. Like, you know, we got together in that. And I'm the only guy left now from the gang, the Bowery boys in Kern River.
That's the downside of living on.
Your
friends are gone.
Yeah, they're all gone by. You got to survive.
Sure.
Do what you want. Travel.
You look in superb good health, I must say.
Well, I'll be 83
for another 10
soon.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I lost that weight, that 65 pounds, 60 pounds, you know. So I feel great.
So skin does contract when you...
That's the next year.
Okay.
Yeah, the picture there.
So I've been just sort of whittling away at my weight a little bit.
You know, that's the toughest thing. When I lost that 65 pounds, that was the most struggling thing that I could do. And I was eating salads every dinner. I didn't have no red meat. I'd eat fish or turkey or chicken in my salad.
Yes.
And then during the day, if I'm hungry, I'd have a fruit or a vegetable. I'd chew it on. And I was just losing weight all the time there. Yeah.
So a lot of these people played for the Bearcats in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Had you enjoyed red meat a lot before that?
Oh, I used to, we always had steak when we played hockey, eh? Yeah. We'd have steak, a steak and carrots and maybe a small potato.
Yeah.
But we'd be playing. The team would pay for it, you know.
Get used to enjoying that kind of food, and you could afford to buy red meat, given the rich real estate operator you were.
Oh, I used to love that real estate. And all the guys and my kids, they give me a nickname. They call me Chief. Because I said, you know, because I did everything for them. I built their houses too while they were working. You know, they're working, and I'm doing the work like I'm doing, footing and everything else. And they would come after and lift up the outside walls when they got plywood.
You nailed them down, lined the ground.
Yeah, then they nailed the plywood on the flooring and a joist, and they'd come after and lift the walls. Then I do the inside walls.
Sure.
And I built each kid a house. I built two of them here for them. There was one just over here, second door over. It looks like my front. And my daughter's over here, five doors down, and I helped them build that one. And my other daughter, I helped them build on the Bond Crescent, a house there. Yeah, so. Oh, I used to love that.
And that all worked well, because these things that a family can sometimes create
three
difficulties.
Three girls and a boy, and you know what, right now, I told them, you know why, you guys are within a mile of each other. Like, there's two in River Terrace here.
Yeah.
And there's one daughter here, my youngest one, and my son-in-law, Paul, he lives on Spence Street, just off of Victor Street there. Yeah. I said, you know what, I've got you guys like this, like a big turkey wing. You're in my wing like that. And we all get along good. My son-in-laws get along good with each other. Well, one needs help, they all help.
That's terrific.
Oh, I say, we have such a good family.
That's a great achievement.
Yeah, yeah. And I have eight grandchildren. And four great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and I enjoy them all. We have a party at Easter, party at Christmas. We all get together.
Great.
And then birthday parties and that, you know. Yes. Yeah, and I always buy the turkeys for the parties.
I see.
Yeah.
Maybe we should return to the grain trade to this extent.
Okay.
I should ask you, you've lived in this city all of your life.
All my life, yeah.
You've watched things
everything
change
goes
over the years.
Yeah,
have you had thoughts about what was going on in the elevators?
Have
you had friends in the elevators?
Oh, I had friends there too. Oh, yeah. And you know what I think? When the union came, remember that Frank Mazur?
Indeed.
He was here, and you know what? They're always saying, more money, more money. So in the end, the elevators, that's it. They shipped it either to Churchill from Winnipeg, mm-hmm, or go on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And all the elevators start closing after that.
So
you're getting too much money. You know what I mean?
You blame the unions.
It was doing good without them. Like, they were getting good money and that. No, but the union, hungry for money, you know.
Yeah.
Ah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You've never belonged to a union yourself.
No, I never did. No.
No.
No, never did. Because I was on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Is there anyone else that you would think of as affecting the way in which the grain trade has developed?
I knew Bob Southern. He used to be with the grain handlers, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I know a few guys that worked there. Four or five guys I know,
sure.
And they had good job. They worked. They're grain handlers. They're testing and stuff like that. They had a good life.
Yes.
They're all retired now.
Sure.
So you know, yeah.
Yeah.
But I said the union killed everything.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we won't debate the perspective, but
right?
We're here to get your perspective.
Yeah,
I won't debate it.
I'm just giving you my theory about it.
There are various explanations.
Oh, yeah.
The Russians get blamed as well.
Oh,
you know, they stop buying.
Oh, yeah.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, Owen, I guess we run our course on this narration.
On the elevators and that. I had a good life. I played hockey and that, you know, down east and there.
Yes.
And once I got the blood clot, like I was owned by Boston then. When I got the blood clot, that was it. No more hockey, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was married.
You mentioned going to Duluth. Did they
do
a better job of treating things down there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I went there and they said, Joe, they said to me, my wife went shopping. And I was there, and there were two doctors, Dr. Barden and Dr. Wolf. And they looked at my leg, and they said, you know, we better get you to the hospital, Joe. So they took me to the hospital in a wheelchair. And then my wife came back and says, where's Joe? Oh, they rushed him to the hospital. What?
That's
so she came to the hospital, and as she came into the door, I was getting my last rites because the doctor said, Joe, you're either going to die 3 days, your liver die in 3 days. Wow. And I had a kid, I had a daughter, 5 months old. You know, I thought, oh, my God, my brother died that same year, you know. I thought, oh, that would be horrible for my mother and dad.
Yes.
You know, to see that happen. But my dad died 13 years after that with the heart. Mm-hmm. Heart. Broken heart. Because my brother died and he's seen it happen too.
Oh, brother.
And that was the worst part.
Yeah. It'd be perfectly awful to be pulled into one of those machines.
Yeah. Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Cut, you know, squashed and that's it. Nothing left there. Yeah. Yeah, anyways.
He lived another 13 years when he was a broken man. And so
So anyways.
He continued working at the mill?
Yeah. Well, he came from the army. He got wounded twice. He was in the army, going there. He got wounded twice. He was a radio man. He got shrapnel in his leg and that. He come back here, work a little bit, dead. That's it. Got killed in the paper mill.
This is your brother.
My brother, yeah.
Yes.
But he was wounded twice in the war there, you know. The Second World War there.
Yes.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tragedy. Everybody's got tragedy.
Well, some more than others.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make light of what you've just said because it is a horrible thing. But I really am interested to find out what happened in those 3 days that you allowed you to be here today to be interviewed.
Well, you know, what happened? The doctor said we're going to have to soak your leg. Hot water, eh? And we're going to give you these pills. They're called dicumarol pills. So what these dicumarol pills did, my big vein was, say, this big. And if we're going to give you these dicumarol pills, and you're going to have a vein going through your blood clot this big, through my leg.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And my wife stayed there 5 weeks because the nurses, they couldn't put hot pads on me because they can only do so much. Eh? And my wife stayed there 5 weeks, night and day, and gave me these hot pads on my leg. And I survived.
It took that long, actually.
5 weeks so I was there, yeah.
The pills would be what, anticoagulants?
They were
breaking up the,
that's right,
the clot.
That's what they were, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm here. I said to my kids, you know what, I'm on borrowed time and I'm enjoying it. Yeah, there you go.
Were you active in the Ukrainian organizations?
No. I went to church, Ukrainian church. I was active in the church.
Which one?
The one at the Church of the Holy Protection. It's been sold on North Court Street.
Right.
The seniors.
McDougal. They got that senior building next door.
Yeah, this father-in-law lives there.
Yeah,
this is the one that is now the Evangelical Free Church.
It's another church now. Yes. Yeah, somebody else. But
it's
a
beautiful church.
Oh, beautiful inside building. There's concrete and everything, paintings, all concrete, big furnace. I think it costs about $1.2 million in the long run. And then
did you work on it at all in the building?
Pardon?
Did you work on the building?
I was on the committee to get the property from the city and then oversee with the guys or the contractors and that, you know.
Yes.
That's how I sort of learned about carpentry. I could read a blueprint in that. So I sort of learned that way.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they sold it. I think they sold it for $250,000. Like peanuts. Like big church, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's a
but what are you going to do, eh? You can't keep, the people aren't coming. The young people aren't coming. Yes. It was all the old people there, you know.
Yes.
And then little by little, the young people don't go to church. They don't go to church now, the young people.
No, it was an Orthodox church, right?
Yeah, Greek. Yeah, Greek Orthodox.
Which meant that the language remained Ukrainian as
well. Yeah, Ukrainian. And there was English, too. We had English Mass.
There was some English Mass.
Yeah, for the benefit of the people that talk English.
Yeah, well, the youngsters, they need that language change. Yeah. I know well from the Mennonite churches used to be in German, and they had to make the transition. Yeah. And so.
And like I said, in time, the young people don't go to church, so they couldn't keep the church, so they got rid of it.
Were you involved at all with the building of the seniors' facility?
No, I wasn't there, no.
Because that was done by the church?
Yeah, the church, And that's a nice building,
30 years ago?
Oh, at least that,
Yes, it's very nice. I've been in it many, many years. Of course, when you're a member of Parliament, you get into places you wouldn't, others wouldn't get into. So
right.
I was in it a long time ago, back in the 80s.
Yeah,
Well, thank you very much for this interview, giving us this narration, this fine sunny afternoon. With
And I said, if you want to look at this, my life history, you can look at it. I wrote it all down in a couple of days, but I want to give my kids before I die, I'll say, this is my history.
None of them have interviewed you, eh?
But they always say, oh, Dad, you should write something about yourself. I did now. Sure. Right from scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah. From what I did there and that, you know. Yeah. Well, like I say, I'm enjoying life now. Go dancing every Friday at the Polish Hall here, up here.
On Court Street?
Court Street here. Yeah. No, on the Cumberland. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the combatants.
The Polish
combatants league.
Yeah. Region. Yeah, right. There, yeah. So, what the heck. I enjoy it.
Well, you were witness to two of the most important events ever in Thunder Bay.
That's right.
The Young Gator explosion and the West End Bruins.
That's right. Two explosions.